Hi, everybody. It's Jack Hubbard, and welcome to 10 Minutes With. We do a lot of programs here around sales, sales management, sales conversations, and other kinds of things related to sales in banking and other industries. We don't do a lot on marketing, but this one is kind of unique, and I'm very excited about it. I had the chance recently to read a book called Brand Intimacy, A New Paradigm in Marketing, by a couple of folks from Emblem, M-B-L-M, Brand Intimacy Agency in New York. And those authors are Mario Nattarelli and Rena Plappler. And we had a chance to talk with Rena about not only the book, but what's going on in brand intimacy. And I think for bankers and non-bankers alike, it's a real eye-opener. She talks a lot about Amazon and Netflix and Apple and their successes. And she talks about United and Foursquare for some missteps. This is all based on research. They've done research for years and years and thousands of people around the world on what brand intimacy means to them. And it resulted in this great book. And so I hope you'll enjoy this. Rena is a terrific ambassador of brand intimacy. She's had more than two decades of work around the world. Bank of America, Citibank, MasterCard, AT&T, Merck, and several governments, as well as other industries. A BA from McGill University. Two master's degrees from Harvard. This lady is brilliant, and she does this 10 Minutes With brilliantly. So welcome, Rena. Glad to have you on 10 Minutes With.
Well, thank you, Jack, for having me, and I'm excited to be part of the 10 Minutes With series. I'm going to be talking today about brand intimacy and the implications for banks and financial service brands. We'll just kind of touch the surface today and hopefully get some people interested in this new marketing paradigm. Brand intimacy is really a new way to think about marketing. As the world has evolved with technology advances, consumers in control, push from pull, the evolving way we use and buy and shop, we really thought it was necessary to have a sort of new way to market. The traditional ways of promoting a brand or a business really haven't changed in the past 20 years, despite the world around us changing rapidly. So we spent a lot of time thinking about this idea, which at its core, brand intimacy is really about leveraging emotion and building strong bond. This concept is pretty simple in actual fact. And in infancy, branding was always about a relationship and a bond, but in more recent times, it tends to become a more rational process. Emotion is often left out. So we're glad to bring it back. I've co-authored a book about it, and we'll touch on some of the ideas and what it means for financial services today. And a little about me. My name is Rena Plappler. I'm a partner at a firm called Emblem. We're headquartered in New York City, and as I mentioned, I'm author, along with my partner and co-author, Mario Nattarelli, of a book called Brand Intimacy, A New Paradigm in Marketing. You can find me on all the usual social channels at rplappler, and emblem.com is where you can find a lot of the information I'm going to share today, which you can review at your leisure. What we have done is people build bonds with brands, and we've done this for about 7 years. It started with extensive qualitative online communities where we spent 8 weeks talking to folks around the world about how they connect with brands, what brands they identify with, how they talk about the relationship with the brand. What we learned is that people form relationships with brands in a very similar way that they form relationships with people. And from those insights, we now do the largest study of brands based on emotion. It's a study that we do pretty much annually with 6,000 consumers, 400 brands, and currently in three countries. We look at 15 industries, one of which is financial services. but they also range from automotive and travel to luxury and media and entertainment. I'm going to be focusing our talk today on the U.S. findings. And I take this opportunity to show you a sample of one of the brands in our study, which is PayPal. It's actually the number one brand in financial services for our study, and it ranks 30th overall out of all industry brands. It's a little hard to see, but as mentioned, you can go to emblem.com and use the ranking tool and review any brands that we have data on at your leisure, as well as look at those cuts by age, gender, income, and geography. So just to orient you on this page, what you can see is a quotient score. That is a score out of 100 that we've developed using our brand intimacy model, and it's a convenient way to see how a brand does year over year or against competitors. The other components here are called archetypes and stages, and this may look a little different than a typical brand performance or brand equity that you might have seen. So archetypes on the left are markers or characteristics that intimate brands are most likely to have. You can think of them as a brand. Usually brands have a combination of these. These archetypes were revealed in our early qualitative research and then validated in our quantitative research. And you can see that PayPal does very well on enhancement, which is about making the user better, smarter, and more connected. It does well on ritual, meaning the brand is ingrained as a daily habit. And it also performs highly on fulfillment, which is about service and performance guarantees. On the right-hand side, you can see stages. We have three, and these measure the intensity of the relationship between the brand and the consumer or the customer. In brand intimacy, you already have to be a user to be intimate with a brand, just like in a human relationship. You have to have a relationship to establish some form of intimacy. So this doesn't use metrics like awareness or consideration. It already assumes those exist. And sharing, the earliest stage, is when you're already engaging with the brand, and fusing is the ultimate and most advanced stage of intimacy. The other boxes on the bottom are just interesting information that we think make a good snapshot of a brand's performance: how frequently you use it, how hard it is to live without the brand, order score data, and price resilience, which in the case of PayPal is really not relevant since they don't charge you to use the service. But what we found is that intimate brands are harder to live without and are able to command a price premium relative to the category average. Financial services category more broadly, we've also written on the branding implications here. And I think we'd all agree that, or most of us would agree, that brand is more important than ever to stand out today, to build strong customer relationships, to retain customers, to acquire new customers, and to deepen bonds that exist. Yet, few brands in this space have a really differentiated brand or value proposition rooted in factors that drive decision making. Few give prospective customers a clear and compelling reason to choose them. And another key aspect of brand intimacy that applies here is we now know that decision making is largely based on emotion. Many of you might have read Daniel Kahneman's book, Thinking Fast and Slow. He's a Nobel Prize winning economic and behavioral people. Use much less rational decision making and rely much more on emotions, and then rationalize it after the fact. So this has tremendous implications in building. Knowing we're instinctive people that make decisions quickly based on emotion, how are we appealing to that when we promote our offerings and services? So looking at the financial services category broadly, and of course, you know, there's lots of components within financial services, whether it's fintech or retail banking, or asset management, or investment banking, or hedge funds, credit management, et cetera. But broadly speaking, what we see is that the category, like many, has an increasing amount of competitors of scale and size and geography. Generally speaking, there's limited brand differentiation. And meaning if you were to read the homepage, let's just say, of any financial services brand and cover up the logo, they largely sound indistinguishable, or they really don't sound like something you could immediately identify. Expected brand narratives tie to this, and I'll talk about this a little bit more, but when all brands in the category are saying the same thing and customers want to hear, it's very hard for customers to tell one apart from the other, because think about it, you're basically reading the same message just with a different name on it, and that's hard to create distinction with. Another interesting nuance that we spend a lot of time on with our clients is most financial services brands tend to highlight what they do, which of course makes sense. You know, what you're offering needs to be very clear. However, it's usually at the expense of who you are, and often very few brands let people know why they exist, why they're important, what matters to them, what makes them different, what do they value. And in brand intimacy terms, those are all important things in making people feel comfortable and making a relationship start to occur. It's not merely transactional. A lot of times, too, people focus on words more than design. However, I think you also have to realize that many people are not as verbally oriented, and many are more visual, and a distinctive visual component can do a lot to help a brand stand out. In the U.S., for example, we know there's a plethora of blue financial service brands. There's a lot of flag motifs or different graphic elements. Again, those don't really work hard to help you stand out. Knowing what we know now through advances in neuroscience, how people process information, the more you look like other brands, the less it will be easy for people to choose you. The other thing is, you know, parody content. A lot of brands, online especially, sort of offer very similar things to their customers. It's very hard to have a real competitive advantage with content because it gets copied so quickly. So I think it's important to think about what are the ways that you can create something valuable to your customers that others may not be as easily able to mimic quickly. We talked a little bit about the herd mentality, what I call the herd landscape, and that's sort of the expected brand narratives. And this page is used by the top firms in the States. This was, I think, shown in Hoover's. And while perhaps true, words like disciplined and client-focused and experienced lose meaning when they're used interchangeably with your competitive set. Distinguishable. The other important thing to note is it's unclear if any of these messages are actually affecting and driving decision making. A lot of times what banks will do is think this is what a customer wants to hear, so I'll say it, not, you know, is this true for me? Is this my strongest asset to leverage? Is this what makes us different? And so often there's a disconnect between brand messages a company uses to promote versus what may motivate a customer to choose you. So in the case of how you communicate, I would certainly strongly recommend to look at what the competitive landscape is saying. Perhaps you do have to mention a few of those things just to be sort of table stakes. However, those may not be the words to focus your brand on.
So we've talked a lot about financial services, and obviously that's our main audience here. One of the things in the book that I absolutely love, and by the way, I mentioned this in my introduction, every bank marketing professional should be reading this book, Brand Intimacy. It's absolutely spectacular. But one of the things you talk about in the book is a brand intimacy quotient by industry. And if you look at banking or financial services, it's about 31.1. First of all, can you talk a little bit about what it means? And then I have some follow-up questions related to what can a bank marketing professional do to improve that level of intimacy?
Sure. And actually, the financial services industry quotient has dropped in our latest study. But with score from 1 to 100, it's based on prevalence, which means the percentage of users that are in demand and the intensity of those users. So where they are along those three stages I talked about, sharing, bonding, or fusing. If you have more fusing customers, your score tends to be higher than if you have more sharing customers. So it's a shorthand score that demonstrates how a brand is performing in its ability to create these sort of intimate brand relationships. Financial services does have a, well, this year, I should say, because the new 2018 data has just come out and we're releasing industries one at a time. But financial services is now at 21.8. The industry average of all 15 industries is 27.1. So it is below average in the US. Media and entertainment is the top intimate industry for context at 45.8. And so I think financial services is very important to people. You know, few things are more important than your health and your money, frankly. So I do think there's an opportunity for a category like that to resonate and have a strong emotional hook versus other categories that may have a harder time being as relevant. So I think there's certainly an area for improvement, and it looks like the performance could use it, seeing how it's declined from the previous year you mentioned, Jack.
Well, and one of those things, certainly you build a brand from the inside out. And one of the things you talk about in the book are have done to change the mix a little bit. You talked about in the book, you talk about American Airlines and you talk about PayPal. And one of the things that struck me and I was so pleased about is that you can't have a great brand on the outside if you don't have good employee engagement on the inside. What are some things you found around that subject?
Absolutely. So I think, you know, your employees are often an overlooked or under-leveraged asset. They really become the evangelists, the ambassadors. And this is especially true, you know, in a sales-oriented culture where they're directly interfacing with customers. And so rather than just looking at a brand as, you know, something that you're using to get customers, we also look at it as a way to build bonds with the people who work there, both currently and as a recruitment tool, because we know a lot of clients and financial services are competing for talented pools of people. So the stronger your brand internally, you know, the better in terms of the talent you get. It takes work, though. You have to think of the internal audience in the same disciplined way that you think of your customers. And building those bonds doesn't happen by accident. You know, we strongly encourage a brand-oriented culture that provides education, information, you know, in exciting ways for employees so they understand what the brand is about, the art of what the brand is about. They're vested. They have tools in which to access if they have questions. They have materials at the ready that they can use when needed. Their input is valued. They're part of, you know, a system of workshops and engagement. Whether it's on intranets or brand management tools that let them offer feedback and input. And the other important thing about employee engagement is when you have employees that are actively promoting the brand in social channels, on their social channels, again, that just generates more interest because you've got, you know, however many employees as your first line of offense already spreading the word for you at, you know, zero charge, basically.
Well, you brought up something that's perfect timing, and that is this whole idea of social collaboration. And so if I work for a bank or I work for any company, you work for a company, clearly one of the things that's going on is the whole idea of being social and being out there. So what have you seen that companies have done successfully to connect the brand of the company with the personal brand of the employee? How's that working for some of the really good companies?
Well, I think, you know, when there's a synergy between who you are as a person and who you work for, when those values are shared, that's obviously a home run and a way that a person's brand is reflected in work and who they are. And that's even true for, you know, a customer. It may be hard to think of in financial services terms, but, you know, if you think of Harley Davidson as an easier example, you know, the people who are loyal to Harley Davidson and who consider themselves sort of, you know, fused in the ultimate state of an emotional connection, feel that their values are reflected in Harley Davidson, and the Harley Davidson brand is reflected in them. And, you know, in financial services, you may want to look at some of the fintech brands. Venmo has really become part of the social fabric for millennials, and again, enables kind of lifestyle to have. So in those cases, I think you can see that the values of the brand reflect the values of the person, and that's where you sense that there's really the
connection. You talk about connection. Show your slide about additional resources and show them, et cetera. So you talk about connections, and here's the conundrum. So if you look at Amazon, for example, I've never met anyone from Amazon, and likely I won't, but we still do stuff on Amazon all the time, and the fulfillment is absolutely spectacular. Banking is a little bit different. Banking started out to be a very personalized industry, and now what's happening, because people are more mobile, because people come to the bank. My daughter lives in New York, and she never goes to the bank. And I, when I was brought up, my grandfather would take me to the bank every Saturday because there were cookies and coffee, and they went to see the banker. That doesn't happen much anymore. You talk in your book about loyalty and intimacy, which are absolutely critical in the financial services industry like others. But how do you balance the use of technology that more and more people are using with the banker's ability to get intimate with the client on a one-on-one basis?
Well, I think largely speaking, technology is a double-edged sword. It can create and help facilitate intimacy, but it can also create some barriers. So like anything else, it's nuanced, you know. We now have this ecosystem in our pocket, our smartphone, that has fundamentally changed, you know, how we exist. And what we have found is that brands that exist in part of that smartphone ecosystem are more intimate than brands that don't. So the way people connect with brands now isn't less intimate, it's just different. It's a different form of intimacy. So one thing to look at is, you know, what is that experience like? Everybody's got a responsive website and those kind of basics. But, you know, are there other more interesting things that can be done to cater to the way people now use a financial services app or site? In terms of, you know, the customer relationship, that shaking the banker's hand and, you know, while that may be less common than when your grandfather was taking you for the cookies or the toasters, you know, that's still an important part of a relationship. I think, you know, people know that there is a branch, and when there's a problem, that they can go there or they can talk to somebody. You know, we've all heard a lot of the negative spin when customer service offerings are out of the country or feel, you know, bureaucratic or anonymous. So I think the human component is still important. It's just not the only component. And how do you leverage technology to your benefit when people feel that, you know, you just send me that or those fine levels of balance?
Yeah. And it makes it more interesting of a challenge, because you talk about fintech, and some of those organizations are unregulated, whereas banking is regulated. So in some ways, we operate with one hand tied behind our back. But I wanted to ask you one more question, and I don't know if you have ever dealt with this at all, but if you look at the brands that you listed as the top brands, and they wouldn't be surprising to anybody, the Amazons, the Netflix, Apple, et cetera, they have one name, and that's their name. They don't change it all the time, and that's brand consistency. But you've got banks who are First National banks, and now they become a regional bank. And the First National Bank of somewhere is not a very good brand potentially to use. What's some advice that you might be able to give when a bank continues to grow and finds the need to change its brand name because it's continuing to grow? What are you seeing? What advice do you have?
Sure. So what I say is, you know, take a step back and don't look at what your new name is in isolation. Look at, you know, what your new brand is and how does the name connect those pieces. A lot of times people feel, understandably, a local or regional name is limiting. So they come up with a name or somebody suggests a name and it really has nothing to do with anything else or the logo or the messaging, and it all feels very disconnected. So use the opportunity and say, okay, you know, are we growing still? Then we probably don't want a name that has us again. You know, what is it that we stand for and what name will help reinforce that? You know, conversely, if the bank has grown and it's still focusing all its strength in a certain region, you know, perhaps mentioning that region in the name makes sense because that's something that, you know, there's clear strength in with that bank. So I'd say, you know, what tends to happen is people look at the name in isolation, very tactically, as opposed to using it as an opportunity to sort of be tip of the spear. You know, what is the name? How does it link to everything else? And what can we do to use the name to stand out and build something strong? Again, this is, so we don't want a name that's frivolous or inappropriate, but it doesn't mean, you know, we need to sound exactly like everybody else with, you know, first this or one that, or, you know, things that are already saturated. So I'd say those are sort of some top line observations.
Well, and here's the thing that I find too, is that a lot of time prospecting, for example, for a new client or a new series of clients, and to try to get them attracted and use your brand is a really important thing to do, and it's a fun thing to do. But one of the things that you brought out in the book is, and I'll just read the headline. It says, "Intimacy is not permanent," parentheses, "without work," close parentheses. One of the things I find with banks many times is they'll bring customers in the door. They don't lock the back door. They're easy to date. They're hard to be married to. They're easy to say, yeah, I'd like to do business with you. But when the bank should try to get deeper and wider to create a level of loyalty and intimacy, I don't think they do as good a job as an Amazon, as an Apple, as a somebody else. So, well, Rena, what I wanted to show now on the slide is you have some additional resources. The book, your 2018 study, your assessment. Tell everybody how they can get those kinds of things.
Sure. We offer a ton of resources on our website, emblem.com, assessments that you can evaluate on your own how your brand is performing from an intimate perspective, things that you can do to start building an intimate brand. You can download our study that just was released. You can play with the online ranking tool, as I mentioned, that helps you look at brands that may be relevant across different demographic criteria. And of course, there's the book if you want to bite off something pretty hefty and learn more about building an intimate brand. And that's available at all your favorite bestseller bookstores.
And it's an interesting book. It's a very, very high level book in terms of thought. You really need to be thinking when you're reading this thing. Stories that parallel a lot of the things that you're doing. And I find it tragic that your book wasn't able to profile a lot of banks. There are other books that have talked about, there's a book called Firms of Endearment that came out a number of years ago that talks about great firms like you talked about, Whole Foods, et cetera, et cetera. But there weren't any banks listed. And that's very disappointing. And your study that where banks went from 31% down to 21% in a year says it all about what we aren't doing in our organizations to help this. And marketing is part of it, but it's got to be executed by people. So that's where that connected brand, the inside and the outside, are so important. Well, Rena, congratulations on an amazing book. It's a number one international bestseller, Brand Intimacy. And if you want any more information, you can reach out and contact Rena. She's available and she's very, very open to talk. Rena, thanks for being with us today on 10 Minutes With.
Thank you so much, Jack. Have a great day. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks again, Rena. Great to have you with us on this edition of 10 Minutes With. This is Jack Hubbard, and for those of you that are interested in listening to our other programs, we have 15 of these recorded now, and we have several of them out on our website at smandh.com. If you'd like one of them or all of them for your use and distribution throughout your bank and throughout your organization, just email me, jhubbard@smandh.com, or give me a call at 847-717-4328. Thanks again for joining us. Catch you next time on 10 Minutes With.